Now, how could one of these iPhone 12, I think, prepare you for heaven? And this is the way it works. I signed up for Wawa Rewards. Does anybody get Wawa coffee? Oh, there are serious problems in this church. And so this is the way it works. I go to Wawa Rewards, and guess what it says? And this is where possibly preparation for heaven. No rewards. Check back soon. Kind of in a morbid way. I don't know, but I thought, oh, well, if that's the way it's working, so be it. And then, this first song we sang this morning was what? Day by Day. And that's one of the challenges. Could we say maybe one of the, I don't know, problems is the right word. But that's one of the challenges of the Christian life, isn't it? It's so daily. Every day. Every day. I wanted to touch on this subject this morning. I've mentioned it in the past. Just kind of hit briefly on it, and I thought we'd look into it in more detail this morning. Before we do that, let's pray. Father, we thank you for your word. Wow, we truly are blessed people to have your word in our own language. And if we don't like that translation, we can go to the other one. Or the other one, or the other one, or the other one, or the other one. And there's so many people that still don't have any in their language. And thank you for giving us the privilege of being involved at some level and seeing your word go to those that still don't have it. So as we count fish this morning, we want to count more than that. We want to count our blessings because we know that you are the blesser. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. As I was thinking of this, I thought, well, let's bring in some family. June 6, 1948. My parents. That's really them. Just get over it. Okay? 5 years later. Okay, what's going on here? I might have to do this. My little mouse isn't working too good this morning. 5 years later. Okay, I'm just seeing if you're paying attention. I was actually born when my folks were in missionary training out in Fault Springs. Well, my parents went back to Iowa. My dad was a farm boy from Iowa. He went back to Iowa to pay off their training bill. Well, didn't have TV. Watching corn grow was pretty boring. So, instead of getting their debts paid off, they're going farther in debt. And they ended up, we were there in Iowa, for northwestern Iowa, for quite a few years, for several years. And then my folks came back into the training, I don't know, in about 58-ish, 1958-ish. And then they went through language school up in Fredonia, when the language school was up in Fredonia. And we hit the field. We hit the field in July of 1959. And where were my folks going to work? Where were they going to work? Well, my dad being a mechanic, farm boy, I don't know if they wanted to work tribal. I mean, that was their vision, was to see the gospel go to tribal people. But my goodness, they had so many kids. I mean, they had their own dorm. Maybe they were going to be dorm parents. And so, I've often wondered, like, how did it happen that my folks decided to work, or were led to, or whatever the terminology you want to use, to work at our MK school there, Puraquequara, the den of the electric eel. Quara is Guarani for like the den of or the place of. A lot of words in Portuguese are from Guarani based. Iguaçu, the falls of Iguaçu, big water. Pira, and how many fish have the word? That's a generic word for fish, correct, Dean, in Guarani. And you got piranha, you got piraíba, you got piraruku, you got all kind of piras in Portuguese. But anyways, how was it that my folks were going to end up in Puraquequara, the den of the electric eel? And I found a picture that might have given me a clue. They took a survey trip. Now, what would you have done? Put yourself in their canoe. What would you have done? And there's the clue as to why they ended up working at Puraquequara. Problem solved. Well, language is always fun. Many of us in this room have had that experience. Most of us have had that experience with English. Some of us with other languages, including English. A good friend of ours, in fact, he used to clean this church, Gene Long. Yeah. In fact, Cheryl Rich, when she was still single, and Cheryl and I went here today, and we came over here, didn't we, one night, Cheryl, and cleaned this place with Gene Long? Yeah, we did. Then we went up to Daytona Beach or New Smyrna or somewhere. Anyways, he was talking with one of his friends in the Yellow Leaf tribe over in, I believe, Thailand. And he asked him, who made the moon? And that his tribal friend replied, nobody made the moon. And Gene was quite concerned that he hadn't even gotten that far with these people yet, that they didn't even realize that somebody had made the moon. And he said, well, who made the stars, the planets? Nobody made the stars and planets. So, I guess the conversation moved on to other subject matters, and he went home. And he was quite concerned that he hadn't even gotten, kind of off of first base in helping these people understand where the moon came from, where the stars, planets came from. So he told his wife and his kids what he had said. And they started laughing. They said, well, you didn't say who made the moon. You said who ate the moon. So the tribal guy's like, this dummy's going to teach me? You know, the moon's right there. Nobody ate it. Can't you see it? So some of the fun of language learning. I don't know what the difference is in the words, but it must have been, awful close. We have, Cheryl did the clinic with the Ayures there in Paraguay at a mission station in El Faro Moro. And she had taken this over with very little experience in the clinic, and about 600 people were in our community at that time, so it was quite a job. And it was, we had clinic hours kind of to help, because for the women to have their schedules to get in their language study and on and on and on, it was convenient to have clinic hours, usually in the morning, before the people went out to, you know, find something to eat. And that kind of a thing before they went to work. And so, Cheryl wanted to get back into her routine of the day, so she would tell the Indians, she would tell the Ayurvedas, okay, when you hear the bell ring, come quickly to the clinic. Hiake. Is how you say that word. Come hiake to the clinic. And so, the next day, she'd ring the bell, and they would come slower. And so it's kind of like, you know, of course, in a spirit-filled way. I told you to come quickly to the clinic. Okay, why didn't you come quickly to the clinic? Okay, so the next day, ring the bell, ding, 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 ding. Even slower, later. And so then she, again, come on, Ayurvedas, I want you to come quickly to the clinic. Well, she was saying the wrong word. She was saying kiinke. I mean, there is some difference there, but when you're learning language, it's easy to get stuff mixed up. And so she's saying kiinke. Oh, and so if you see us thinking, oh, I must have come too fast yesterday, I'll go slower tomorrow. And her husband, he go ahead the same way. Oh, we must have come too fast to the clinic. We better go slower tomorrow. So every day she says to come slower, slowly to the clinic. Oh, we must have come too fast. So they come slower. And all the time she's thinking, I said to come quickly to the clinic. Wrong. And so the challenges of language learning. Okay. And some of those deficiencies in language come across even in certain ones of our translations, don't they? Language is very fluid. It changes. I mean, look what the computer's done to our language. Look what technology has done to our language. In our own English language, I mean, it's like, wow, I can't even talk it anymore. And so, I want to cover a part in the life of... This almost sounds like it's going to be Pick on Peter Sunday. They mentioned Peter sinking in the water and seeing the wave. Well, he's going to come up in this discussion too. I mean, it's one-way discussion. I don't know if it's going to be called a discussion. But it has to do with something, and the text is in your bulletin. The text is in your bulletin. It has to do with when a contact that Jesus had with his disciples. Okay? Now remember, some historical context is Jesus was resurrected. He had talked with a couple of fellas going to Emmaus. He had appeared to the 11 disciples in a room. And then he had removed the doubt that Thomas had that Jesus was really alive. Those are different appearances at this point that Jesus had with his disciples, with his friends. And now Jesus appears by the Sea of Galilee. Some of your translations will say Sea of Tiberias. And I thought, okay, what's the difference? Well, I don't know. The best I could come up with was Tiberias was a little town on the lake or on the Sea of Galilee on the west side. So maybe that's why they call it also the Sea of Tiberias. And so we're going to pick up the narrative there, and we're going to go back to the familiar. Later, and you can see the text there in your bulletin. Later, Jesus appeared to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee. Who were the sons of Zebedee? James and John, I believe. Do I have that right? Okay, two other disciples. Who were these two other disciples? I don't know. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We're going with you also, they all said. So they went Went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. And I think you know why. Pete, you got to get a better boat than that thing. Probably a little bit more realistic. Something like that. And I saw the picture that I guess Nyberg come up with in the bulletin. I didn't find that one. That looked like a better picture than the one that's in the bulletin. Of the fishing boat and the guys. Okay. So just a little map there. Sea of Galilee up north there. Tiberias there somewhere, kind of on that hump of the Sea of Galilee that points west towards the Mediterranean Sea, and that's where they're at. I always like looking at maps, like, okay, where is all this stuff? You see Nazareth there, we see Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and the relation there, and you think of, yeah, if that's a Nazareth that Jesus was from, that's quite a ways, isn't it? It's not like you get there, like you head off by foot today and get there tomorrow. But anyways, who's the top of the list, in the list of the names there? Simon Peter. Two other disciples, we don't know them. But maybe that's where we fit, unnamed. How many times do we see there was a man, there was a woman, they don't give a name. And that's probably the large majority, isn't it, of Christian people. So many people unnoticed, unnamed, but faithful. Doing what God gives them to do. And so we see seven experienced boatmen. I believe we're safe in saying that. These guys knew what they were doing. We're going to get in a boat with them. Let's get in the boat with them. Get out of the boat that my mom and dad were in on that survey trip. And we're going to get into Peter's boat. It's bigger. Okay. What do you think was going through the mind of Simon Peter? Put yourself in his boat, in his sandals. Wow. In the recent happenings in his life, when you think of his relationship with Jesus and all that had gone there, all that had happened there, what was going through his mind? I'm going fishing. What were some of his other names? Wasn't one of his names Cephas? I believe that's Aramaic or something like that. His other name in Greek was Peter. What do those two names mean in their language? Talking about languages. Stone. Rock. But more recently, he was like a wet noodle. But I don't know how to say that in either Greek or Aramaic, so we'll move on. You know what Simon means? It means hearing. I don't know if there's some significance in that, but I find it interesting that name Simon means hearing. Like we have hearing trouble. Maybe he needs a hearing aid. We'll see how well he listens. I'm going fishing. Anything wrong with that? I don't know. I mean, that's what he knew, isn't it? This is exactly what he knew. Was this a compromise going back to his former occupation? Was he trying to just provide for his family? Was he possibly done with this Jesus thing? Did he have failed that? There was no command given that he was disobeying, as far as I know. So only the attitude of Peter's heart would answer that question. But it is interesting to note that they were at the Sea of Galilee because Jesus had told them to go there. Matthew 28:7, Matthew 28:10. He says, I'll see you in Galilee. So at least they were there at the right place. Had the scandal that happened a few days ago cost Peter and the others their support? Their way of making a living, of surviving? Because we see in Luke chapter 8 verse 3 that Joanna, the wife of Chuza, that sounds like something good at a Mexican restaurant. Chuza. But anyway, Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's business manager, and Susanna, and many others were contributing from their own resources to support Jesus and his disciples. Had they lost that? And so now Peter has to go back to fishing. Well, 7 experienced boatmen, 0 successful fishermen. How long had they fished? Yeah, I wonder, I don't know the process of putting the net out or how they did this. But you know, in Brazil there, when they had the big boat, the little canoe with the net in it, they go around like this. And then the little canoe takes a rope around. And then there's ropes tied to the bottom of that net. And these guys are feeding that out just right. Okay, then when the little boat takes that rope all the way around, they make a big circle. And then they pull up the ropes from the bottom and pull that net up to trap any fish that's in there. How many times could you do that in one night? I don't know. But if that's kind of the way they fished, yeah, they're probably getting pretty tired by this time. And no fish. 0 successful fishermen. And can't you kind of hear him whispering? Like, what is going on? We've never had this bad of luck. This has never happened. I mean, at least we caught something. But not this night. Not this night. So going back to what they were good at might not have seemed like a good plan now, eh? Wow. Peter's probably wondering, man, am I good at anything anymore? If you were to put a self-esteem meter on Peter's life, it's probably pretty low. Probably pretty close to 0. In steps a carpenter. How's a carpenter going to help them? Continuing on with our narrative. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And the one that they did not know was Jesus calls out and he says, children, have you caught any fish? Some translations kind of say, you got anything to eat or something like that? No, they replied. Not even, well, we almost had one, but it got away. Just no. Then he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll get some. There's got to be something here in our own American culture, left and right. I don't know. I'll let Larry figure that out. Which side is the best to be on? So they did. And now they were not able to haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Unbelievable. Like, why did we see these fish over here? So many fish in it. Jesus stood on the shore. There had been previously 3 resurrection appearances in John's gospel. Each one was unexpected, and I imagine this one was unexpected too. Remember, the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Maybe because it was of his sudden appearance. He had told them to go to Galilee, as I've already mentioned. They will see me there. They will see me there, he says to them. And I wonder if they expected to see him in a religious place. I don't know if they had a synagogue there, but whatever they had. Maybe in some religious place, not on shore. But isn't it interesting to see where Jesus showed up in their lives again? They were at work. They were at work. He doesn't scold them for, oh, you're going back to fishing? None of that kind of stuff. He showed up in their life, in their work, interested in their lives. His interest, his concern, and his power, he's showing them in the normal places of where life happens. Why didn't they know who Jesus was? I can imagine these men. I mean, if us guys, if Paul and Stephen and Dave and I and whatever, us kids from MKs from Brazil were going to go fishing, and this happened to us, I know what we're going to be talking about. What are we going to tell our families? What are we going to tell our wives? Our kids? What are we going to tell them? My goodness, we've lost our touch. But this kind of guy on shore kind of gives us an off-ramp, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, we can tell our wives. I know what I'm going to tell her. Cheryl, this guy shows up on shore, and he's telling us, do it this way. No wonder we didn't catch anything. We shouldn't have listened. Anyways, you kind of give us an off-ramp there. But that's not what happened, is it? This guy on shore, they didn't know who he was. Couldn't tell. Maybe it was the mist. Maybe there was something in the air, fog, that they couldn't see who it was. And he says to them, children, how's the fishing? That's not a downplay, I guess. But then in their culture, according to my research, they would say, like, hey, fellas. Like we would say, fellas. Hey, guys. That's kind of the way this is. They just says children. And he could have appeared like anyone else passing by on the shore. Maybe wanting to buy some fish. Hey, guys, you got any fish? Because maybe he was interested in buying something to take home from him, for his family. But he did make him... The man on shore did make them explain, no, we don't have any. So then the carpenter gives instructions to the fisherman. Of course, they didn't know he was a carpenter, did they? Probably a good thing. We don't tell you how to make your chairs. Well, you're telling us how to get a fine fish, you know, that kind of thing. So it might have been a good thing they didn't know who he was. On the right side of the boat, you'll find some. I don't know which side they normally fished on in the Sea of Galilee. Which side of the boat? There's nothing that indicates one side was better than the other. My guess is it probably had more to do with whether you were right-handed or left-handed. If you like putting out the net this way, on this side, or if it was easier putting out on that side, whatever. But there's no indication that it was any better on the right side or the left side in the Sea of Galilee. It wasn't even this couldn't have been a test to these men if they were going to trust Jesus, could it? Why? They didn't even know that was Jesus. So it couldn't be a test of their obedience to Jesus. And yet it is kind of an example of how to find guidance from God, even in small, unexpected ways. Are we willing to listen to input from others, even from somebody unknown on the shore? But they learned that the right side is best. Beyond their widest expectations. This stranger on shore hadn't commanded him to go fishing, but once they were fishing, he directed them. Isn't that the way it is with us? God will direct us. Just get going, one step at a time. Go ye into all the world, one small step, one small step, one small step. Don't be afraid to change your methods. Don't be afraid to change your methods. Oh, we only fish off the right side, dude. He didn't say that to the guy on shore. They didn't know who he was, but They listened to what he said. Now the narrative changes a little bit. John recognizes Jesus. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work. I don't know what that means. He jumped into the water and headed to shore. So it's the Lord. Okay? Now, Peter and John have had some athletic competition. I remember down there in Brazil, Paul Rich and Mark Emsheimer were the only two fellas in their senior class. The only reason I know that is because I was in eighth grade when I graduated from eighth grade. Okay? And we liked to watch Paul and Mark race because they were both pretty fast. Paul was a lot better at the long distances. Mark maybe was a little bit faster in the short distances, or some competition there. And I wonder if there was some competition here between Peter and John. Peter and John go to the tomb. Who got there first? John. And here, who recognizes Jesus first? Peter says, "I'm always in second place." Well, there's one way to look at that if there's just two of you. Okay? John wins, but he finishes the poor next to last. Peter finishes a strong second place. You figure that out. Okay? So he jumps into the water and he heads to shore. Peter did. He wasn't going to let John be first at this. "I'm going to beat John at something. I got to beat John at something." Now, what do you do when you're going to jump in the water? You jump in fully dressed? I don't know what's going on here with Peter. He puts on more clothes. I mean, I don't think the guy was stark naked. He probably had his tuned loincloth or whatever those guys used to wear. Maybe it's what we'd call underwear. But he puts on then it's like his whatever. And then he's going to jump in the water like, "Peter, you've lost it. We're concerned about you." Yeah, I mean, you know, you're really, anyways. And so, I mean, I wonder if Peter thought he could walk on water by now. Well, you don't usually put on more clothes to go swimming. "I'm going to walk on this water. I'm going to do it somehow." At least there weren't waves from any indication. But I know it was improper to go before somebody else improperly dressed. But, I mean, if I'm going to go take some clothes with me, I'm going to at least hold them in one hand out of the water, maybe swim in one hand, that kind of a thing. But Peter didn't do that. John was first in recognizing Jesus. Maybe Peter was going to be first in devotion. So he gets there. We have an invitation to breakfast. The other stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for there were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Fish cooking and over a charcoal fire and some bread. Dragging the net. Wow. Peter got out of work, didn't he? He might have had a rough time soon, but at least he didn't have to drag the net. And they get to shore and they saw a fire, coals. Where'd that all come from? Where'd this come from? Where'd he get it from? There's coals, there's firewood or charcoal or whatever. There's fish, there's bread. Where did that come from? Fish cooking, wow, can't you smell it? We had a catfish in Brazil, pirarara, that was pretty fatty. The best way to cook is over an open fire. All the fat drips out. Bread. I wonder if the coals reminded Peter of anything. Fire, where he's with a maid. I wonder. Another fire. Where Jesus looks at him. Peter leaves weeping. Now he's at another fire. This one's different. Something to eat. Jesus had food for him. He didn't belittle what they brought in, that they had caught. It didn't make the menu, but it complemented the menu, doesn't it? So Jesus, the man on shore, Jesus didn't disregard what they had brought in, what they could contribute. In fact, he says to him, bring some of the fish you just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard, dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Counting fish. He drags the net to shore. I don't know, that speaks something of, if he did it by himself, would that speak something of Peter's physical strength? Must have been in pretty good shape. If that's what happened. 153, I'll leave that up for a while so you can count them. Are they all there, Danny? I don't know. I think that's like, why don't you say like 150 plus? Or around 150? But why? 153. I don't know. As you put yourself in Peter's boat and Peter's sandals, they figure out this man, possibly to some fear in Peter's heart, the man standing there is Jesus. I wonder if he's stalling to count 153. I don't know. Now, come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. That's kind of an interesting comment. Kind of an interesting, I don't know if it's a twist or whatever it is. They didn't ask, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. But there was something different, wasn't there? Something different about his hands. Something different about his feet. Something different about his side. There were scars. They weren't there before. So the carpenter and the fisherman enjoyed breakfast. Jesus served them the bread and the fish. He didn't say to them, okay guys, help yourselves. Still served them. Interesting, it's nay together. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. Any significance in the third? I don't know. But the third time, and now we go come to the public restoration of Peter. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, kind of picking, singling Peter out here. It wasn't the first time they actually had met. This was maybe they had met at the resurrection. We have no account of what they said there. It'd be interesting to know, but we don't. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And I wonder, I kind of tend to think it might have been the fish since they were so specific on how many there were. 153. Maybe that these refers to the other disciples because Peter bragged that he loved Jesus more than they did. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said, feed my lambs. So, Jesus was not done with Peter. He was not done with Peter, and it seemed like Jesus wanted all the disciples to know that. Son of Jonah, different ways, different translations say it. Jesus was aware of Peter's frailty, wasn't he? And he didn't use the name Cephas. He didn't use the name Peter, which means rock. He used the name Simon, like, Peter, listen, hear me. We need to have a hearing. Okay? Four words used for love in Greek. Storge, phileo, eros, and agape. Four different types of love. Here Jesus uses the agape one, which refers to all giving, uncaused, unselfish, unconditional love, whether you know the person or not. Peter answers, you know that I phileo you. Yeah, we're friends. But it's kind of beyond a casual friendship. It's There's mutual respect. There's shared devotion in this phileo relationship. There's joint interests. There's common values. There's attraction. There's reciprocity. There's attraction to as friends as to where there's give and take. Of course, we kind of define it as brotherly love, and so we get the words philanthropy, Philadelphia, from these. Do you love me more than these? He said to him the second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said, tend my sheep. Again, he uses that word agapao, doesn't he, that agape love. Again, Peter says, you know that I phileo you. Okay? He didn't put on there this question, did he? Do you love me more? That thing that was missing was more than these. On that second question, just do you love me? He said to him a third time, I wonder if there's any significance in threes in Peter's life. Do you love me, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Peter was grieved. But remember what I mentioned before. This third time where Jesus says, do you love me? He didn't use the agape. He used the phileo. Peter answers, you know that I phileo you. But interesting, isn't it, that Jesus comes and meets Peter where he's at. He meets Peter right where he's at, right at phileo. He didn't ask Peter, are you sorry? Do you promise to never do it again? Are you going to make a new commitment? Didn't ask him none of that stuff. Says, do you love me? Feed my sheep. There's still work ahead, Peter. And even if we're at phileo, there's still work for you. There was another person that used the word phileo. Judas Iscariot. Now his betrayer had given them a sign saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him. And then another text, while he was still speaking, behold the multitude, and he was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. So Judas kisses Jesus there, Judas Iscariot. You know what the word for kiss is? Phileo. Same place Peter was at. Same place Peter was at. Yet you know what? Peter was included in the Great Commission. Even if phileo was the best he could do. But he's going to move on from Fort Phileo to the Acropolis of Agape. He's going to move on. How do I know that? It's another verse. Well, how can I come up with that? I think it's in the verse that's in your top of your bulletin. Oops, the wrong one. 1 Peter 1:8, it's right at the top of your bulletin. You love him even though you have never seen him. Though you do not see him now, you trust him and you rejoice with glorious, inexpressible joy. The word for love there is agape. Peter got there, didn't he? He recognized it. And if he recognized it in others, I'm sure he could recognize it in himself. Where's our heart at? A more important question is, where is God's heart at? Where is God's heart at? You know where God's heart's at? In my Father's house are many mansions. Where I am, there you may be also. Jesus wants us to be with him. If we're a phileo, yeah, we can become stronger, more mature, but God still wants us to be with him. Jesus wants to share his home with us. Wow. What a future. What a future. And I hope that'll be an encouragement to you today. Now, in Ayurveda, we say, ego sui uote. That's all my words. And that's what you wanted to hear. I'm done. We're dismissed. Have a good day.